This show is not for the easily offended. So if you are easily offended, go listen to something else.
Welcome back, Indie Noise listeners. We're here again.
Or listener.
Hey, I listen. So that means at least in a...
Bob Gart listens.
Yeah, so we got two listeners.
I screwed everything up already.
We're back again with another episode of the podcast sponsored by no one.
What number? What episode number?
367. Jeez, no Steve, we're all falling apart.
Yes, as Kevin intimated, this episode we are Steve Rakerless. We have been evicted from the bunker, wandering. Three lost souls.
He's missing.
In a post-apocalyptic world. And those three lost souls are...
I would Phil. Stab you guys in the back.
From Ottawa. Say hi, Phil.
Hello.
And Kevin, Whirlwind X, also from Canada.
Hello.
The crappy part of Canada, though.
What?
Yeah, you're like in farmland, aren't you?
Oh, jeez.
Now, Phil, to be fair, there's lots of crappy parts of Canada.
I'll agree. That's true.
Well, and, if you're the capital, they only make it nice because it's the capital, right? Like, they have to take extra care because if someone sees it, they're going to be like, it's the capital.
I think they said, though, that Ottawa was the most depressed city in Canada.
Oh, wasn't there that whole Ashley Madison hacker thing from that happened and it was, like, based in Canada? And then he just said, like, half of the users... Like, for Canada, for, like, Ottawa, were, like, users on that website or something.
Yeah.
And I was like, what?
It's a lonely place here.
Apparently.
Well, when it's cold out, you need to find someone to snuggle up with.
People like to bang in Ottawa, what can I say?
And last, and likely least, is myself, Andrew, the LA Rabbit, broadcasting from Los Angeles.
From Hollywood.
Or there or thereabouts. And we, as I originally introduced, are the podcast that talk about independent comics. While being sponsored by no one, we are part of the Noise family, particularly Comic Book Noise. You can hear some of us also on our family-friendly show, Marvel Noise. But this is a show where there may be some explicit language, but there may not be, you know?
And our thoughts aren't held back by the man called Marvel.
No. As Derek Coward said in our intro, maybe this isn't for the easily offended. Although I can't imagine who's ever been offended by anything we've ever said.
Yeah, you'd have to.
I don't know.
Kevin gets a little crazy sometimes, but...
And in this episode, along with peppering our talk with exciting books for reading, I will have my independent version of San Diego Comic-Con 2015. I already talked a little about my marvelous experience at San Diego 2015, but I also did some indie work there.
Really?
But, Kevin, why don't you start us off? What have you got on the hopper?
I thought you were just teasing that you were going to talk about the con.
I am, but that's a teaser. So I got to, you know...
Well, how far do I have to fast forward?
Well, I don't know how long Kevin talks for.
Fast forward 5 to 10 minutes.
40 minutes.
I have something left over from our classic episode. It's Eastman and Laird's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Adventures.
The cartoon one?
The Archie one.
Okay, yep.
Because, like, it's issue 5, because the first 4 were, like... adapting cartoons. I forget how many.
Is this the one where Raphael gets his black costume?
No, not yet. No. Soon, though.
Because I remember that really impressing me at the time.
So is this a crossover with the Archie characters or just from the Archie company?
No, they published it for a while, the cartoon version.
Yeah, it's really weird because while they do have some action figures to sell... I guess it's kind of like the Transformers or G.I. Joe, like, they just did whatever. And they, like, had, like, outer space adventures and, like, they were after, like, lost artifacts and all this stuff that never, as far as I know, like, a giant cow head licking everyone has not made it into any other media.
And that is a shame. But the thing is, it was more fleshed out than normal cartoon comics or the cartoons itself, I found.
Yeah, like they took
risks that other ones wouldn't. I really like that, like Raphael's black costume or the cow that warps you places.
So what was the time frame on this, roughly?
Right when the animated series was out from the 90s, like around then.
Yeah, I have the fifth printing, but it says that this was originally October 1989.
So 80s.
Okay. Yeah, but most of the series was in the 90s.
And so that cartoon was out in the 80s?
Yeah, late 80s. Oh.
And so is this Eastman and Laird writing and drawing these? Or
No. This is, is this some of their crew? I'm not sure, because I've seen some of these names before. Like Ryan
IDW,
Brown.
IDW recently reprints them all in big trades now.
And then Dean Clarane. Like, I sort of remember these, so I kind of wonder if, like, in their whole studio they had, if some of these guys were just in the studio. But the first issue, like, I totally get, like, the music and, you know, the voices and everything. Like, you kind of wonder if you're reading something this specific, and if it sounds like the proper thing, like, if you get that. But I totally get that. Especially for, like, Bebop and Rocksteady. I actually would add more to Bebop and Rocksteady. Like, they're not as crazy as they normally are. Like, they're like, we gotta get the Shredder.
Well, it's a kid's comic, you yeah. remember.
But they tone it down. Like, they're not always just, I don't know, maybe it would be harder for kids to read if they're
yeah, stop
speaking
watching
slang
cartoons,
all the time and they're misspelling words. But anyways,
so
the cover
does
for this
also
has
the Mirage
a giant
Studios imprint what? On it?
No. No.
Oh, I didn't know if this was also, because they started with the Mirage Studios.
Yeah. No, this was, I don't think there was any adult ones coming out at the time, maybe.
Okay.
Are you sure?
Or, I think it was Image, maybe? Would that make sense?
No.
No? Hmm. Like, I'm sure Archie's the only ones that was making Turtle comics at the time, maybe.
There was at least Tales or something.
Yeah, these totally were off my, I mean, I had some awareness of the Turtles, like those Mirage books. That came out, you know, when we're reprinted endlessly in the 80s. But I sort of, I guess, fell off. I never really watched the cartoon much.
Oops. The funny thing is right in front of me, the other day I found this tin box in, like, some of my boxes, and it has all my little digests in it. And in it I have a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles number 5 of the digests that Kevin's talking about. Did you guys used to collect all those little digests? Like, I have a lot of the DC and Marvel ones here.
Only a few. I had, like, DC would do those greatest comics.
Yeah, that's, I have a lot of those. I love those.
But this is the intro of Man Ray in here, or like a manta ray. Like, they go, okay. Like the turtles go to an aquarium and they see this guy that's all nerding out over a manta ray. And then, of course, he goes, like, to check out some illegal dumping, and then he puts his hand when he sees, like, some mutagen, like, in the water. He's like, I'm gonna check this out, and now I have to go check out the source and just put my giant hand in here. And he's like, oh, maybe that wasn't such a good idea. And then he gets mutated into a manta ray, and the turtles are, like, on their way back from the aquarium, and they take the beach route. And it's a weird coincidence. It's like they keep on, like, meeting up with each other. Like, the turtles don't really team up with the manta ray, but they're all fighting Shredder and Bebop and this crazy sub that, you know, they even drew, like, a face onto it. So it
looks... at that time they were setting up the mutant animal team, so that's why they were introducing a lot of characters like him, which was a team Raphael joined for a while. It was like all the good guy freak versions.
Yeah. And there's even a panel in here where Bebop is orange, Rocksteady is, like, green, and then Shredder, his face is, like, purple. And I'm like, did someone, like, forget what? I don't know. There must have been some weird coloring gaffe or whatever. Because I can see Shredder being purple if it's, like, shady, but for no reason, I don't know. It's just weird.
So was it Man Ray? Was that like a takeoff on the surreal artist Man Ray?
Don't know. Because I would say no, because they set up everything beforehand, but I don't really know.
Because I'm not super familiar with his work. I mean, I know he did photos and paintings and was, you know, Salvador Dali and that school.
I don't know. Maybe they thought, hey, Manta Ray, I can, put this reference in here and the kids won't get it. I don't know. I suppose it's possible. Shredder in here is out to, it's funny, because this takes place on July 3rd, and that didn't clue anything in for me. But yeah, Shredder's going to disrupt July 4th and the fireworks and the Statue of Liberty and everything like that. Of course.
Not that that would bother you.
No, I see July 3rd. I don't think of anything. It's like a past Canada Day.
July 3rd? Why? What does that mean?
Because it's like one day until the American celebrations. So they're like preparing ahead of time.
Preparing for what?
Because Shredder has to get back into Krang's good graces because they waste a mutagen and everything like that. And Krang's like, Shredder, those lunkheads don't know what they're doing on your sub and all that type of stuff.
We're getting Krang in the next movie. It's going to be awful.
You're very positive.
Well, I think, Phil, you're the only one that's seen the most recent movie, right? I know I didn't see it.
Yes, I've seen it twice.
Wow. Oh,
that's high praise.
First time I hated it. Second time I enjoyed it more, but only when there were no fight scenes. Like, all the fight scenes were just, I did not like them at all. But some of the other stuff, like, I laughed a bit here and there. Yeah, they don't look as cool, but...
Well,
it's not as bad as I think, like Transformers or anything.
The turtles are the turtles are the turtles. They're a mainstay. They brought a lot of changes in.
I'd rather get a shitty movie than no movie, though, anyway, sometimes.
But you already see, in this case, I would disagree because you already have an awesome cartoon that produces like 24 episodes a season.
Cartoon doesn't hold up.
The cartoon that's currently running? Yeah.
It was good for a while, but it gets boring, that shit. I'm an adult. You're
crazy.
I'm freaking adult. I want to see some live-action turtles, not this little cartoon diddly shit.
Well, I guess that's why you have to put up with the nose and all that.
Now. I read comics. That's my cartoons. Well, when I first met Kevin, I don't know if he remembers, but I've asked him to keep an eye out for something, and I finally got my hands on it, which is... an original trade called Lloyd Kaufman Presents The Toxic Avenger and Other Traumatic Tales. Do you remember that, Kevin?
I remember The Toxic Avenger.
Well, do you remember me asking you, though, to look for that trade for me? It was years ago, so maybe not.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever run into anything like that.
No, you never would because it was very hard to find. But I finally got my hands on it because I went after all these comics I've always been after, and it was very hard, so I'd order from multiple stores online. Like, I got... all the Captain N and the Game Masters, Trailer Park of Terror, which is an independent like anthology one I've always wanted, and a couple others, but this was the other one. And this is by Devil Dew Press, if you remember that company.
They're back.
Oh yeah, that's right, Kickstarter. I collect one of their Kickstarter books, actually, that Squarrier ones.
Yeah, they actually merged with First Comics.
Okay. And were you guys, did you guys ever collect any of their comics at all?
I think I tried to read a Phil Hester comic, like Stronghold, but it, got delayed or whatever.
Yeah. See, I read some of their stuff when Tim Seeley and all of them were around. And this is one of their books, because they're big horror fans. And growing up, they watched a lot of the trauma movies, which don't hold up at all now, but
as a kid... Tim Seeley's still around.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, yeah.
He's making the big bucks now.
Yep. He does good work. I like his humor, too. And so it's just an anthology, which is... it's almost like a sample book in a way where they go through a lot of the movies and they give you, like, a short story. And so the first one... is just like a... so I'll just run through and tell you some of the stories. Like, there's... a bunch of Toxic Avenger ones, obviously, because he's one of their flagship characters. Class of Nukem High. Have you guys ever seen that?
No.
I don't like the trauma films. I like my horror. I don't like that kind of tongue.
I don't like trauma either.
Aren't we being silly? I don't mind bad horror, but I want him to be earnest.
Mm-hmm. Well, the thing is, I don't like trauma either. I cannot watch a trauma movie. Like, I can't put one on. But as this anthology, though, is really good. Like, I really enjoyed it still. Like, the art for this one here, Class of Nukem High, is really cool. It's a black and white one, and just really neat art. There's one comic, one story, which is just based on all the lesbians in the movies. Like, why they use lesbians, basically. Tromeo and Juliet, which was one of their famous ones. A big star starred in that one, I think, first. I forget what. But like you say, yeah, Trome was really cheesy and dumb. But as an anthology, I thought, like, I enjoyed more in here than I would in a lot of other anthologies I would, where it's hit and miss. But I think it's because it's a lot of, like, Tim Seeley stories and stuff. So it was a little more up my alley. And it was
people. Did he do the art as well, or?
He did a lot. He did a bunch of the stories and, writing. And I think he did the art for at least one.
Okay.
Because, yeah, he does art once in a while, but I don't think very often.
No. I mean, yeah. I remember he did some Heroes for Hire for Marvel. Well,
oh, seriously?
Yeah, he did at least one or two of those issues.
Oh, wow. I never knew that.
He does a very nice Misty Knight.
Okay, so it was that Heroes for Hire. Huh? Yeah, that's why I probably didn't. I'm not a big Misty Knight fan.
Oh, it might be Villains for Hire. It was that in that time
frame. Oh, Villains for Hire, yeah. He was doing Marvel comics around then, so.
I
never knew he drew, though. I'm surprised he drew then.
I think it was just one or two issues.
Yeah. Because I don't even remember him drawing Hackslash at all, really. I think he always gave that to other people.
And then what? So this is Devil's Due.
Yeah, Devil's Due Press.
And how long ago, roughly, did this thing come out?
This was from 2007, so not really that long ago, but it's very hard to find. Like, I've even been to, like, the trauma booth at conventions, and they don't even have it anymore. Because obviously it went out of print, right, when that company stopped for a while. I believe it went bankrupt, if I'm correct.
Yes,
I think there was a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the people did not get paid by the end, kind of like cross-gen, right? Probably.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's always sad when those companies
aren't
folding.
It's weird. But some of them don't go bankrupt. They just stop publishing. Like, that's kind of... Or then they're... Like, they're supposed to be, like, paid off, even though they're going bankrupt because they were one of the... You know, it's just weird.
You know what company I think that's going to happen to is Titan.
No.
I love their stuff. I love their books. I want to pick up all of it, but I go look at their books in the store, and like I bought one of them the other day, and basically they take exercised one issue, like 48 pages and stuff. They'll slap a hardcover on it and then charge the price of a trade. Like, that's how they sell their comics.
But isn't that a European type of
thing? Well, it's bullshit. Anyways?
Well, the other thing is they have a strong, they're bulking up their licensing division. Because I did go by their booth at San Diego Comic-Con just recently. I was kind of walking through because I liked their books, but I get all the stuff that I get isn't their license. And their big stuff was their license. They had a special, like, Doctor Who cover.
Yeah.
They also were one of the partners in the Lego minifig promotion. There were all these giant Lego minifigs all over San Diego that you had to photograph to try and win. But they were there doing, I believe it's the World adaptation. No, sorry, Home. It's that Pixar movie animated. We picked up a copy and got it signed by the creators for a friend's kid. It's one of those... You know, kind of like E.T. for the new generation.
Yep.
But I went by there because I had been in Artist Alley at the Ogopogo table, and I picked up a comic, but they were signing at the Titan title. So I went and got Katina Cafe, written by DeBray Bailey, drawn by Tracy Bailey, at the Ogopogo Press. But like I said, they were signing at Titan. And this is a all-ages anthropomorphic book. The pitch is a bunch of cats do
read
the big
city. So many of those.
They are. This is non. This is all ages. It's not like a sex book, but there is always some.
Oh, wait a sec. Are you saying usually you buy the sex ones?
Well, I wanted to distinguish because there is a large volume of those that are.
I did not know that.
Oh yeah, there's a whole bunch of ones that are. But they have kind of so it's this the main character is moving in to a new place and starting a new job at this Ponpon's Imports and Cafe, and it's like this strange, like she has to dress like a maid and serve tea, and they sell anime and manga there.
The brothel.
And it's her first day, and so the outfit's kind of this weird sort of French maid outfit. There's a little minor cheesecakiness to it, but it's not really that. It's more kind of, I don't know, there's a weird bizarreness to anthropomorphized books. But I really liked it. Like, the art is super solid.
Well, what type of animal is she?
She is a cat, but there are, like, there's...
Cats would be represented as sexy in those type of comics, I imagine.
Pretty much all the animals are always represented as sexy in all these books.
Even an ostrich?
But,
Crocodile.
You know, there's foxes, too. Those are always popular. What appears to be a bunny, I would guess, is in here. A bear. Like, there's always, like, a weird mix of... I mean, I guess some of them have only one creature, but I enjoy the other one. So the other thing that's fun is it's just kind of like wacky madcap adventures. It's not like, you know, they're killing the ancient demon that runs the world or anything like that. So it's sort of a fun, you know, like if Archie...
So no demons and light on farm sex.
Yeah. But, yeah, so it was just one of those random books, and it's also one of those ones I like because there's no indicia on it. So, you know, there's no, this could have been made yesterday or it could have been made like 20 years ago. There's no discernible way to pick that up. And there's kind of something fun about.
You mean like they have none of the copyright stuff, you mean, at the bottom?
Yeah, yeah, there's none of that. I mean, it's the Ogopogo Press table actually had someone else there, and I saw he had done a really excellent Moon Knight sketch on the backing boards. He'd done a whole bunch of these that he was just about, like, for, I think they were $2 a piece or something, maybe five, no more than five. But, and so I saw that and I bought that. And then when I was buying there, of course, I'm going to buy a comic. And he had a whole rack, all these different ones, and that's the one I picked. So I thought it was just a really fun way to get people's attention by having these kind of cheap, quick character sketches. And then, you know, I'm always going to get a comic.
Yeah.
Because that's the fun part. But anyways, I don't know. Like, there's no number on this. I mean, it starts off presumably as, you know, it's a launching point. So I'm going to guess number one. But, yeah. It
doesn't feel like you're thrown right into a story.
No, no. I mean, you can follow. But like I said, it is odd in the middle. There's just four pinups of the different characters. But, yeah, I liked it. I mean, I would definitely read more, but I have no idea. I mean, I guess I can go to their website or whatever, but I just thought it was funny. The my tip to small press people is I would throw a little indicia in there about maybe the... You don't have to have the year, but at least, you know, put the issue number or whatever or something. I think the year is kind of helpful because it'll let someone know if they should try and run down more issues or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the Baileys are a good team. It's fun stuff. If you like animal, anthropomorphized animals. Kevin, speaking of anthropomorphized animals, what's happening over in Ottawa?
You mean like Godzilla in hell?
Yeah.
Does he count as one? Did you guys pick up
Godzilla? Isn't he a monster or a kaiju?
Well, yeah, I was just making a little joke, a little comment. Did you guys pick that up, though?
No.
No, there's not much to talk about because there's not one word in here.
But with that artwork, like Stoko, like, do you need a lot of words?
That's why. No, that's why I picked it up, obviously, because I'm a fan of Stoko. And So basically, I don't know what happened in the one before this that he did, but I'm guessing something happened where Godzilla went to hell, or maybe it didn't. But basically, it just starts off with him falling down into hell, and he just kind of crash lands. And it's just him basically fighting monsters and like just the Godzilla way, but it's there's not one word, so it goes really quick.
Yeah, but is and he,
yeah, I almost
like, is he boxing his way like through all the levels of hell? Like, is that the high concept?
It must be. Like, you don't really get that from this issue, but it's actually, you know what? At the very end, he does fall again, so it must be. Huh. He must be falling further down the levels.
Now, so, how do you spell kaiju? I have a point, but I'm curious.
K. Do you remember, Kevin?
Is it K-A-I-J-U?
Yes.
Something like that.
Because there's a sushi restaurant that opened up near me called Kaiju.
Oh, yeah? That's a good name. That's a good name.
I'm always like, I kind of want to, like, is it Godzilla theme?
That'd be awesome.
It would be.
Yeah.
But I didn't notice anything from, like, it looks like just a regular sushi place, but I was like, whoa, that seems very cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I was thinking this would be the perfect type of thing to get collected.
That's what I was going to say.
Oversized with Stoko's art.
Because the art's so beautiful, like, I hate to say it because then you don't support the issues, right? But this is a trade weight. Because this is something you want in a nice hardcover, and monthly, you just don't need it.
Yeah, they finally put that Half Century War out in hardcover too. I got the issues originally, like a few years ago.
Which one was that?
That was the original, like, generational Godzilla story that Stoko did, where it was like one story was like in the 50s and the 60s.
Oh, okay, yeah, I never read that, unfortunately. I gotta pick up, look for those trades.
Yeah, it was really good.
Cause he did a few, I think. I remember I read one where it was like a mobster in a building that was getting destroyed by Godzilla, the first issue. That was pretty good. I think he did that one. Oh, yeah, and one other quick one, just because there's not much in there, is I've dreamt about this moment since we started this show.
Uh-oh.
I get to talk about DC Comics.
What?
Star Trek, Green Lantern, the Spectrum War. This is my chance. You guys can't stop me.
Well, I got my thumb hovering over the kill switch.
Hold still. It has a cover by Frank Villa. A beautiful cover where it's like the starship driving or going through a Green Lantern symbol, and by IDW and DC, obviously. It's mostly a Star Trek comic almost. It's the only thing I don't like, though, is it's the new movie characters. Because I guess that's their main comic is based on them. And I want the older characters. I like the movies.
You mean from the Green Lantern movie?
No. From Star Trek.
He means the alternate universe Star Trek from the past two movies.
The younger characters. And, I love those movies. But I would rather see some of the, like, Next Generation or something like that.
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, but basically, so it takes place in their universe, and a guardian gets killed in their universe, and it has one of all the color of the rings. And basically, they end up going to, like, all the main characters on the crew, so they all get their own power ring, and then Hal Jordan ends up showing in their universe. That's pretty much all that happens, and overall, I got, like... Like, it's a fun comic, I guess, but it's as far as these kind of crossovers go, it's really nothing that special at the moment.
Oh, who's the team on it?
Wait, so the team is Mike Johnson is the writer, art by Angel Hernandez, colors by Al Sanchez. That's it. So, yeah, so... I would say that would be a pass, though.
All right, Kevin, what do you have for us?
Should we tackle one of these things? So should we tackle this Yankee business?
I don't understand it. It's very pretty.
I was I was hoping you would be able to lead me through this and figure out what I just read exactly.
Because I'm like, boy, this looks good, but I have no idea what it is. So
I'm glad I didn't read it then, because I was going to say that it looked awesome. Yeah, I just flipped through it, but
yeah, like,
never gave it a chance.
I have the print edition, which has a full-color cover and back cover and everything, and it's all in 152 pages, and I think there's only maybe 40 or 30 up on Study Group Comics, but it seems like there's almost like two narratives going on at the same time, like someone's like giving their thoughts on the world as separate stuff is happening on the page.
Well, explain what we're talking about, Kevin. I don't think we've set the table here.
Oh, jeez. Well, there's this, it's, I think it was sold to me as a trippy Doctor Strange, possibly Ditko book. I think that's what they said. I'm trying to remember.
I don't think Ditko has quite the strong subject matter that opens up the prologue with, but okay.
But it's called the Yankee, and I guess he's our hero of the story. And it looks like, who are our creators here? Andrew? Where are the...
The credits are... Boy, this is a professional operation. Jason Livion, Ian Macewan.
Oh, yeah, it's on the back in really small text. Okay.
I'm probably mispronouncing those, yeah. But those are the names.
Anyhow, it looks like there's like supernatural stuff going on in this world, or like real crazy stuff where everyone's like doing drugs or what have you, and it looks like something happened to the world at some point.
Well, it also looks like it's possibly an alternate, because they talk about there were all these different states and like Texas Instruments unified them. So I think it's supposed to be like a slightly alternate history, maybe.
Yeah. But they also go on about like about the how people used to fight corporations and stuff, and about individuality and stuff like that too. So I don't know. it's hard to describe, but I guess it's like a Doctor Strange like guy is like walking through all these different adventures. And then there's like this, it messes with your head, because at some point someone says, well, what about flower as computers? And then they're like, well, what about computers as flowers? And then you're like, wait, what? What does that even mean? What are they talking about?
Well, as you say, it starts, it's a not safe for work. You sent me the link. I don't have the physical comic, so I only read what was online, and hopefully we'll remember to put something in the show notes so the listener can read it too. But I really like the sort of very detailed artwork, but it just sort of jumped around. The main guy, I guess he's like a wizard or a magician or a musician or all three, maybe. I got the stuck a feather in his cap reference, but yeah, I just don't understand. I mean, I understand what's going on in each panel, but how to extrapolate what those equal, it feels like it's something above my head. Like, I'm just not understanding what's supposed to be going on.
Did it remind you of like Burroughs or something like that type of writing, where they would just go off on topics?
In somewhat, but Burroughs, to me, is kind of like music. There's like a poetry and a musicality to the language. So even if I'm not getting necessarily the meaning, there's a real flow to it that makes it its own. Almost if it was like scat singing or gibberish or whatever, I would still enjoy it, because there's a real poetry to the language of it. But yeah, I could see that comparison.
The artwork's really nice, though. Like all the,
oh my gosh, it is. Yeah,
all the contrast and the detail, and I'm like, yeah, this is. And it almost seems like you're going somewhere with the story. Like, oh, this guy, someone's escaped from a mental institution. You're like, okay, they're gonna follow up on that, but not really.
Yeah, they've only you sent me the first two chapters online, And even there, I don't hardly. Well, the other thing is, I'm not sure the cause and effect always. Like, it seems like the characters can do things. And then I'm not just cause and effect, but time. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's linear.
Yeah.
Or if we're jumping around a little bit.
And you don't know if it's like, if they're on a trip at that point, or like when, I think you saw the, about halfway through in this, what I'm reading anyways, where he like falls into the water, and then everything sort of like breaks down into a bunch of like squares and different panels, and then there's a flashback sequence all in one.
Yeah. Yeah. I know we're not doing a great job, but I'm even more confused than I'm explaining, but it was fun to look at. Yeah. I mean, I don't know that I would, I doubt I'd run out. I don't know. Depends on the presentation, I guess. Is it like oversized? What's it look like in paper?
Well, it's like a regular comic. It's like stapled and everything. And the only color is for the covers. And it's sort of, it's not a glossy comic either. It's like more of a pulpy newsprint type of deal.
Okay.
So, like, I don't. Is it oversized? Let me compare it. Maybe just slightly, but not enough for you to notice.
Okay, I'll have to see if this study group company has a booth somewhere.
Yeah, because they're always at TCAF. So, and I always pick up a lot of their stuff, and usually I'm like really grooving on it, and I'm like, I'm not sure about this one, like. It's interesting and everything, but it's not an automatic going, yes, I want more of that.
Yeah, with that art, though, you do wish it was something you really enjoyed.
Yeah. That's the thing. Like, I'll read it just for the art in a way, but yeah. I kind of wish the story.
Like, imagine if that was, like, a Hawkeye comic or something with that art. Like, I think that would suit it well.
Or a Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
Like, that seems like that type of, like, that's what you would want to see, right? And, like, the issue ends on the inside back cover, and I can't even tell you if there's supposed to be like another issue. Like, I would say that, yeah, there's supposed to be another issue, but I can't say with certainty.
Yeah, that's the problem with those indie ones, though. And if there is, sometimes it's like a year away.
Well, I do got something that we can team up on, Kevin. And again, from our trip to San Diego, my wife really wanted to get, CC Bell was making an appearance there. Her big book is El Defo. That's one of those comics that sold a billion copies, but I don't think sold very well in comic book stores.
So that means we ignore that it exists, right?
Exactly.
Is that how the industry works?
Yes, even though it sold like way more than probably. Like in the real world, it sold a lot of copies.
Yeah.
But, you know, if it, like Bone or some of those other ones that, you know, just crush in the real world. So she was appearing at a publisher. And I went there, and I really enjoyed El Defo, but I'm not here to speak about that. I'm here to speak about a particular publisher called Self-Made Hero.
Oh, yes.
And I picked up The King in Yellow and The Dream Quest of Unknown Kadeth.
I think, who was? I think it was Andrew Shaw that was... Was it Andrew Shaw? Oh, no, maybe it was Bob Gar. Man, I get who was talking about... They might have been both talking about this.
So I went, and it's I.N.J. Colbert, and we've talked about him. Certainly the new Deadwardians, I remember enjoying.
Mm-hmm.
These are, what they are, they're adaptations of books, and he's done, I want to get some of the other ones he's done, you know, the Sherlock stories. One of these, Dream Quest of Unknown Kadeth, is Lovecraft, and The King in Yellow is Robert Chambers, who is... slightly before Lovecraft, but essentially a contemporary. And these are his adaptations of those works. And they tend to be, they're thick, but they're the slightly smaller size. They're not digest size, but kind of that in-between digest and comic book size.
Yeah.
And they're full color. And I don't know
more
how...
square than probably, right?
How Colbert has this volume, like he must just... shoot out pages like a machine. Because this is like the list of the books he's done is, like I said, a bunch of Picture of Dorian Gray, several Sherlock, like five or six Lovecraft, plus that other work too. And these are substantial, heavy reads.
Yeah, was it Wild's End or something that's getting a sequel?
Yes, that was the Boom one, and we talked about that was another anthropomorphic creature. And I really, these are really fun. I was a bit, had some hesitation, even though I bought two of them right away, only because I think that Lovecraft and Chambers don't necessarily lend themselves to visual depictions. But I think, because part of it is they're supposed to be these kind of unknowable horrors. So when you depict them in visual takes, you know, that robs them of whatever version you created, or it's not as horrific or whatever. But Cadeth, Dream Quest is very accurate. There's a very kind of sleepy, dreamy quality to the novel, and it lends itself very well. And what I like about it, and this is probably more my maturity than anything else, is a lot of times I'm perfectly happy now with adaptations that I feel are truthful, but maybe different than how I would like them. And I think the strength of both these materials is they survive endless adaptations. One of my favorite podcasts, the Cthulhu podcast by Felbrig, in fact, recently is still serializing The King in Yellow. So that's another adaptation. And what's particularly fun about that is The King in Yellow is actually a series of stories. And what links the short stories, and that's what he reproduces here, is there's a play within the book called The King in Yellow, and if you read it, you go crazy. So it's an intersection, and it leaves the linking point with all these other stories, because the characters in here all read The King in Yellow. But my problem is I'm no expert or anything, but I'm so familiar with the source material, I fill in a lot of the gaps.
Yeah.
So for me, it's really difficult to judge, because the books go into kind of more about their headspaces, and the comics don't. There aren't thought balloons in these. And he's very minimal with his descriptions. You know what I mean? There's plenty of dialogue, but the descriptions are basically time and place, and that's about it.
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes it's not even that. It's like, you know, later, or, you know, this place. But it's not like he fills in, so there's no, you don't really have all the sort of rich inner life of these characters, except as depicted through the images. So, but it's really fascinating for me, but because I know the source material, I know what's supposed to be going on in their heads. So it, you know, I'd be curious to see someone who doesn't know the source material. Kevin, did you read those ones you picked up, or?
No. So I'm thinking I would probably be a good
test subject.
Yeah. Another thing I got to get on. Yeah. I know you're one of the biggest Cthulhu and everything guy. Like, I guess it's hard to go without running into some of the stuff and material, but I wouldn't really say I really know any of it.
You might know more than you think, just because their decision, they sort of, it was a group of writers, and they pooled and they collected real books and fake books, and they would put each other in their stories
You know what this is reminding me of? There was an episode of Scooby-Doo Mystery Incorporated where they had Mr. Hatecraft on there. And yeah. even though I didn't know, like, I've never read, like, I knew what the spoof was supposed to be.
Yeah, so it was that influence and that sort of sharing of, you know, like Robert E. Howard, the Conan creator, would come up. I think he came up with the Unspeakable Cults book that they referenced. But Lovecraft would then throw that in his, and one of his characters would reference that book. And so it was really this sort of shared universe, in a way, not unlike Marvel or DC, where it's a bunch of much in the same way. I don't think it was super intentional to build a cohesive universe. And it's been interesting as modern writers sometimes try and force these into a more rigid structure, when it was never really built to be like, well, this one means this, and so that means that, you know, they weren't built as a consistent universe in the sense to be rigidly constructed like people like to do now. So in some ways, that old pulp stuff is worthy, ancestor of comic books.
Well, yeah, if you're creating comics and there's no comics before you, it's like, what would you be influenced by? Well, obviously the pulp stuff and things like that. The
cowboys.
But if you want to see what he thinks a Night Gaunt looks like, or a Gug, or any of the other fun Cthulhu-like creatures, you can go ahead and pick it up. I will warn you, the Lovecraft stuff is going to be all right, but if you're, you know, a little bit blanching among nudity, you may want to avoid The King in Yellow. There's a story about an artist and his model, and that's the one that leapt out, because there's so much of where the artist talks about, like, what he should do and what he shouldn't do in his head, and that's all missing from here, which is really cool, because it's all just done with the artwork and what he actually says. And I'll be interested to see when you get around. Did you pick up the King in Yellow one, Kevin?
No, I really should, though.
That's the one, because the middle story, the chapter 3, the third story about the artist, I really like. But the problem is, especially because I just heard that adaptation, I have a lot of that inner monologue going, so it's just running right along while I'm looking at the pictures. But Colbert is a beast, man. I unreservedly recommend people to check it out. There's something very satisfying about a creator that not only does a good job, but the proficiency. I mean, you know, that's one of the things I think that makes Kirby such a beloved figure. Not only was he a master, but he was able to just crank out pages, man. That says something. Like, I love Ditko, but I'll always be... And he had a large body, but nowhere near the same volume. And I did also pick up Celestial Edition Volume 3 from the Man of Action table.
I gotta
help out the Man of Action. And then I was thinking, wait, I actually don't need to help them out. They're all richer than... All have Ben 10 money. I probably don't need to be helping the poor indie creators. But I wanted to go buy it from them.
No, you know? Don't they create like all the Marvel cartoons now too? Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're not really...
But so. I think with... With, like, some runs, like, I think it was, like, Why the Last Man, Godland, and everything. It's sort of like you get to the issue before the last issue, and you kind of feel like you don't need... Like, you, of course, you want to read the last issue, but you don't need to read the last issue. Like, in a way, like everything's already been told, and the last issue is more than, like, just, like, an epilogue type of thing. I don't know, it's kind of weird. Like, there can be a lot of space between the last issue and the second last, and... You're perfectly fine because you wouldn't know what's going on or things are radically different anyways.
I've only been reading these in Celestial Editions. I bought the first one at a San Diego years ago. I think it might have been from the Image Boot. They had like one copy left and I bought it. And so I've been waiting for quite a while. So I might have to do a little reread on volume 2, I think, to get me up to speed. But that's where I fell in love with Tom's artwork and... Joe Casey does a great job. Yeah, it's all in all, top-notch stuff. But, Phil, what have you... You've been quiet. What have you got on the table here for us?
Great Pacific by Image.
Oh, by I think I...
Joe Harris and Martin Morazzo.
Yeah, I read the first volume of that.
Yeah, I think there's only three in total. It's really cool. It's basically this rich guy. He gives up all his family money to go make a new state or a country on a pile of garbage floating in the ocean.
And this floating pile of bottles and junk actually exists.
Yes, but it's, well, not quite like this one.
Well, not quite. Yeah, there's not like monsters or anything. But
you couldn't build a city on it, I don't think, the real one.
No, it doesn't actually. It's not like a pot. What it is it's broken down garbage, so it's just polluted the ocean. It's not like a physical
island,
dirt or anything you could stand on. It's just if you scoop it up, it's like got all kinds of little tiny bits of plastic and nasty chemicals and everything.
Yeah, because the ocean currents just sort of keep it there.
Yeah, so this guy, he goes there and he basically... He builds his own country and tells the world, like, you're going to have to accept it. Like, we're part of the world now. And it's just all the troubles he's going through trying to build it. You said you read the first volume, Kevin?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the first one is when he first gets there. And he meets up with a mysterious girl. And there's, like, a mysterious tribe running around. A big, gigantic, like, squid-type monster. Really neat stuff. And... just kind of building up mysteries pretty much in the first volume. And then it kind of jumps ahead in the second volume where the city is all built pretty much. And just him having to deal with assassinations and other countries, a lot of politics and stuff like that. And there's also another organization that is trying to destroy the island because of the pollution and stuff. And just like all the creatures there are mutated, and it's just a really neat comic. The third volume, I believe, is the last one, because I think it's only like 18 issues, which I'll be diving in next. Really cool art, well-paced, everything. It's that, and recently I read one called Hinterkind by, I forget his name, the guy that did that comic we were talking about with the animals. But yeah, those two series really surprised me, I found.
So is it done or is it ongoing? Or?
I think it's done. I'm not sure. Do you know, Kevin? It's like when I looked in the third trade, it looked like that's where it finished, because at the end there was said the end question mark.
Yeah, I'm going to say it's done.
Because
it's Vertigo, right?
No, that's Image.
The Hinterkind thing?
No, Great Pacific. Oh, Hinterkind's done, yeah. Great Pacific,
though. Yeah, I think it's... It was one of the... Wasn't it one of the early $9.99 trades, if I remember?
Let me check. I'm pretty sure, yeah. Because, yeah, it is $9.99, you're right, yeah. It's kind of neat seeing piles of garbage as the background. Like, it's because it's a lot different than what you normally see, like, because it's different than like a post-apocalyptic one, because this is just piles of garbage. And it must have been kind of crappy drawing that sometimes, like, even though it's not that detailed, but just like all the little shapes and everything.
Well, you could be drawing cars or something. Like, I know certain artists don't like drawing certain things, so I don't know, maybe it was refreshing.
I don't know. It seems like it would take a lot of time. It'd probably take twice as long to do a page.
If you enjoyed drawing rubble or something, though, like, maybe you would get, you'd be like, oh yes, rubble, oh yeah, more like styrofoam cans and bottles, and you know.
And the artist did a good job. Like, I couldn't find any complaints in it at all. Suited it well.
Yeah, I think it was a very clean style.
Clean for an island of garbage.
Yeah, how about that?
Would you guys live on an island of garbage if it was a city?
I don't know, because if there's mutants running around and stuff, like, I don't know.
I don't think
maybe
they'd have a comic store.
Oh, jeez.
Andrew would have to go totally digital.
I think they have a backfill. I might be actually, this whole thing might be resting on garbage now as we speak.
Yeah.
Was LA built on garbage?
No, imagine I just think the part I'm on. It's right next to the LA River.
I think he's trying to say the pile of garbage is made out of floating Marvel comics.
Oh, jeez, when they overprinted in the 90s.
I could certainly build a house out of artist editions, that's for sure.
It's Red Hulk issues in the Thunderbolts.
What?
Oh. All right, Kevin, what have you got for us?
What don't I have? Should I put this up to a vote? I don't know.
Sure.
No,
you haven't done Japanese comics in a while.
Well, okay. That's what you're getting then.
No.
I got The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
Oh, yes.
Dude. Story and Art by Shotaro Ishimori. He's the same one that did, I think it's Cyborg 009 and, God. I'm blanking on the other one. I don't know. He has a lot of... He's well known. He's done a lot of stuff, and his other work is up on Comixology.
Stuff we would know.
But anyways, it's interesting. This has been reprinted. If you don't know, it's from Nintendo Power, this story.
Oh, those ones are garbage.
There we go, Phil. Because I remember
bring the show down, but come on.
I will admit there is a certain level of nostalgia reading this, because I remember having a subscription and I never saw the beginning of the story. But yeah, like
story. What story?
If it goes through, like, it's basically the story of the game, but they changed certain parts. You're telling
me the old games had a story.
This is a Super Nintendo.
Yeah, those games didn't have stories then.
That totally had themes. A story.
They had themes. They did not have stories.
You could talk to everyone. You had to save the princess. You had to change between the dark world and your world and get artifacts and everything like that. And there was the whole thing about... can't pronounce this guy's name, but I always used it, like the bad Ganon? Sorcerer guy that you always thought was Ganon. I always just called him Agamemnon because his name seemed like an anagram and it looked close to Agamemnon. But that guy's like getting all these, like Zelda and all these princesses together so he can break the seal and like get the dark world and all this evil going on. So there is something somewhat of a story. So, yeah, they have the whole story of the game in here, but they changed certain things to preserve the, like, mystery of the game so you wouldn't get everything from here. Because there's certain things in here I'm like, did that happen in the game? There's a lot of good action sequences in here. It's, like, very, I would say, like, cartoony and humor. Like, and then they have, like, the... Like, a lot of the, like, motion lines and then characters sweating and all that. But,
originally didn't come out as one page at a time?
I think it was 20 or 30 pages maybe per Nintendo Power. It was weird at the time, though, because I don't know if, like, me and my friends were really bad at video games, but I remember us saying, oh, we're going to pass the story in Nintendo Power soon. So I'm thinking, if it came out as a monthly magazine... I'm like, how long did we play this game for? Like, it's like my memory, like your memory is warped as a kid. So my memory is like playing that game for months and months and getting it in Nintendo Power for months and months.
Zelda games lasted a little longer than other games.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking. But it's just weird to think of that. Like, you know, that in modern days, that's not really practical. Like you would be better off to have like a webcomic or like a digital that came out every week. And maybe you wouldn't. Pass the game.
That's what they do, yeah, usually. Yeah. Like, they do that sometimes.
But I don't know. I was really happy to get this.
Yeah, it's nice, too. That's why I picked up the Captain and the Game Masters, same thing.
Yeah.
And I would have picked up that, too, if I saw it.
Yeah.
Sure.
I've seen it, like, at quite a few places, too. I don't know if it's because it's by Viz Media or it's because it's a Legend of Zelda. Like, it's a general audience type of things. But, yeah, mm-hmm. I've seen this, like, at grocery stores and bookstores and corner stores. It's, like, everywhere.
I always thought that was, like, new stuff, though.
So is it tied closely to the one particular iteration of the... I know they come out with different versions of the video game.
Well, he said Super Nintendo, so yeah, that was...
Yeah, it's a Link to the Past game.
Yeah, Link to the Past.
Okay, because there's been, what, like 10 or 12 of them Zelda games or something?
Oh, yeah, probably like, about.
Yeah, probably one a year or something. Like, there's the Game Boy versions and then, you know, the regular Nintendo versions, and they just keep on churning them out, it seems like. Not that churn in a negative sense. Like, there's just a lot of them. Like, Nintendo really doesn't do bad, like, first-party games. Like, that's the one good thing about that. Like, even if you only have a system with
their games. Why do you always speak in the devil's tongues with your lies?
What?
They make... Nintendo is no good anymore.
They're great.
Like, they can't even put voice chat in their games. They're so behind in the times.
Why do I care about voice chat? I'm playing the game. I want...
It doesn't matter. The point is, like, there's no other companies will make games for them because they don't, like... I guarantee in a few years or so, Nintendo will always be around because they're a big company and everything, but eventually their next console will fail, I bet you, and then they're just going to make games for other systems, hopefully, anyway.
Well, they also do that. They're big. I think they're still big on handheld stuff.
Yeah, but, well, they're moving over to cell phone stuff, which I think is going to be a fail because they're making, like, new garbage games, like those dragon puzzle games or whatever, when they should be putting their old games out there because their old games would work well.
We did get the Wii, but man, we don't ever use it.
Like, exactly. It's boring. I have all the Nintendo stuff, the handhelds and stuff, and there's hardly ever any good games to buy.
See, I bought the Wii U, and while they might not have any other games from any other developers, all their games they do make are all like grade A games, like 9 out of 10, 10 out of 10. So I don't really care if you give me 10 games.
That's because
I'm a casual gamer and I don't play that long. So it's like that brings me through the whole cycle. Yeah, you probably shouldn't be just making games for me, but like that, I think that serves me, and that's all I want. It's like everything I ever wanted. Like, yeah, oh no, I miss out on that shooter on the Xbox or games where I can rip someone's spine out of there. Like, what do I care? No, I'm just saying, why do I care that I'm missing out on those? Like, that's not the audience that I don't care about those games.
And that concludes video game noise.
Yeah, exactly. We should probably wrap this one up.
All right, I'm just going to hit a few last notes for mine. As usual at San Diego, I went by Boudica Comics, got their new anthology. That's Maui. It's this big, nice, maybe about the same size as the Culp or Self-Made Hero ones. This one is, I think, their biggest to date. I don't have the other ones handy, but that's Eva Cabrera and Claudia Aguilar. And, you know, I've talked about them before, written reviews and everything. I'm a big fan of Boudica Comics. They're online. I always suggest people check them out. I haven't actually finished this one yet, but I'm always thrilled with them. Maybe I'll give a more in-depth review when I'm done. Also, one to say... Lion Forge Comics. I don't know if you guys are familiar with them. They've been showing up at all the conventions for years now, but it's always been digital. But they're finally making their jump into print. But it's a lot of weird comics. Like, I don't know if you boys remember the Airwolf TV show.
Yep.
They're doing a comic book of it.
Like a recent one?
Yeah. Like, wow. They had these little mini ones. Free mini ones, and they're like, oh, in August, we're having August 2015, they're coming out in print. So mm-hmm. It's Airwolf, Airstrike, and it's a Barbara Kessel, you know, like a name comic. Oh, yeah. And then the art is Jack Jadson. My problem is that
Airwolf was garbage.
Well, not just that, but TV, and particularly that era of TV, their strengths are really in
the mutton chops,
the dialogue. And the charisma of the actors. Where comic books, one of their advantages is the unlimited sets.
Yeah.
And the fantastic kind of things you can do. And so it seems just a poor adaptation. Like, it's not super visually interesting. And also the dialogue. There's one where, like, half the page is just word balloons. And I don't think it's... I'm not knocking Kessel in any way. I just think it's a... What made that show fun was you liked those characters and the banter, and they had like three sets that they would mm-hmm. wrote. You know what I mean? Like, they're just not.
So they were trying to make it too much like the show almost, when they should have maybe freshened up a bit.
It's fresh, but why would you go to like what you wanted about Airwolf has nothing to do with. I mean, I guess maybe you're like a helicopter fan and that's why you went, but weren't mm-hmm. you going because you like Jan Michael Vincent and Ernest Borgnine and watching them give each other a hard time? Like, it just seemed like TV, and I guess this is where Buffy and Angel fans can chastise me, but I just feel like, not that they can't cover the same things, but TV really is about like the actors and the dialogue, and you can't have dialogue in comics, obviously, but it's not
Buffy, and I thought Buffy and Angel worked. They felt like the shows, and
I didn't like the shows, so for me it didn't. Difficult mm-hmm. way to go, but I guess that would be the counter someone could say, isn't it? But then I feel like, I bet you the sets in the comics were a lot better than mm-hmm. the terrible sets they had on the TV show.
Oh, for sure, yeah.
So in that way, they were expand. You know, they took something from the show and like, hey, we don't have to have, you know, bad CGI and crappy looking effects. We can now have unlimited budgets. So that seems like a useful one. The other book I picked up was the Rampage Jackson. He is a fighter who is also now an actor, I guess. And that's Mike Barron. Badger and all that. And Leonardo Romero and inks by Nelson Pereira. And that one's just a very tongue-in-cheek, like, a bunch of celebrities are going to a Jurassic Park knockoff.
Oh, nice.
And so...
Like, oh, I think I've seen this one.
Yeah. Oh, there'll be no problems. And they're like, wait, you don't have... You know, obviously there's going to be problems. And Rampage Jackson likes to howl a lot. And, you know, they're not really animatronic. They're real and they come to life. And, you know... All of the island's volcanic. Yeah, how so? It might go kablooey. Don't be silly. They never would have invited us if it wasn't safe. Seriously? You know, that type of... Like, they're just... He's an over-the-top action hero, and he's got chains around his... Like, a bandolier that he takes off and beats up monsters with and everything. And he brings his dog with him on the plane. So, if you like that kind of silliness, the Rampage Jackson one... And Kevin might be very interested because the anthology that's coming out, guess who's also in that anthology?
Mackin.
Fabian Nicienza.
Oh, okay.
So maybe there'll be a bit of a Thunderbolt teen tinged.
Or maybe it'll be like an X-Force or something.
Well, he was recently writing for DC.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it just made me, I was like, that's coming out in October 2015. It's a big anthology of Rampage Jackson, including presumably this Mike Barron story. Looks like Kessel's I got one in it. So it's just, that one I'm more for. The Airwolf one just seems like a weird, but I was glad to see that Lion Forge was getting into print because for years they were mostly digital.
I think Airwolf is a property that will never become a good comic. I don't think no matter what you do. It can't.
It seems so random. Like, I don't... I mean, I watched the show when I was a kid, but I have no pull to the property, but...
No.
Yeah, there was lots of fun. San Diego is always a blast, seeing people discovering new comics, picking up comics from old vendors and all the off-site stuff. We went to the Game of Thrones experience, and it really is a crazy fun time. So if you can make it down there... I always suggest giving it a shot if you're okay with crowds, because I'm not going to lie to you. There are crowds there. There are crowds and crowds and crowds. I believe they're also doing a Knight Rider comic, but I did not see that there for Lion Forge. Or if I did, I didn't pick it up. But, that was my take from San Diego 2015. And a super quick nutshell via a few random indie comics. Kevin, Phil? Any last words?
This is our last show. Goodbye forever.
Oh, jeez. We didn't tell Steve.
Well, if Steve ends up listening to this one, it might be. He'll be in trouble.
This episode will be known as the fall of indie comic book noise.
I think we did all right. We go off track a bit, but it's all right.
Who are we kidding? We'll be back before you know it.
With you guys, I don't know.
All of us quit reading comics in general. I mean, all of
us. Never gonna happen.
Keep reading them indie comic book noise. Comic book noises. Book noise. Comics.